G'day and welcome to episode 2 of the Afterthought Board Game Podcast, presented by Games Night App. This is a show where we get to think again about the board games we've played, as well as giving you our hot take on board games that might be great for your next games night. I'm your host, Dave. It's a pleasure to be with you here tonight. My very special co-hosts are Dan and Callum from the Games Night crew. G'day, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, as always. It's good fun to, you know, just sit around and we should have a drink, but usually have a drink and enjoy our conversation. You've got your drink. I need to go get my drink, obviously.
I got a drink. It's Friday night here, Australian time. I'm thirsty. G'day, Cal. How are you?
I am wonderful. I'm gutted to see that I've got half of an introduction when the other half got the ever so lovely co-host to join, and I got to just, oh, how you going, mate? And I'll be honest, hey, I'm good, I'm wonderful. It's the weekend, like you said, it's Friday, so it's Friday, yay. I'm pretty keen to be here.
Well, I've got you've got your very own little segment here, mate. You've got some regular viewers. I know you've got some fans out there. Now, I think they've actually been missing you for a little bit. We haven't seen you on the Twitch stream, which is, by the way, live every Tuesday and Sunday nights, Australian time. And people haven't seen you for a while. So where have you been?
Absolutely. It's amazing to be back. And I did miss all of the fans, and they've been super stunning. I think they're just gutted that I didn't get to kill me too many times, because the hashtag just kill Callum is very real. But I've been off on my wedding and my honeymoon. from Team Not Daniel to Just Kill Callum. But yeah, I've been away on my honeymoon, got married to my beautiful wife, and yeah, it was a stunning day out in the sun. Horse cart came down the line, and she said yes, so I'm sure I pulled one over on her, and she's beginning to regret it already. No, of course not. Then we went down to Tassie and travelled around, took a deck of cards with us wherever we went to make sure I still had it in me to be able to lose at any game that I bring to the table against her. But it was an absolutely stunning journey, from canyoning to zip lining to just quiet nights in at wherever hotel we end up at. So it's been an absolute journey. It's good to be back, and it's good to be getting back board games to the table rather than just little card decks to the table as it is.
So I see Dan's got his bevy now. So we're right to go. We're right to swing right into it, I think. Now, it is good to have you back, actually, mate. So well done. Congratulations. Just a quick comment. We're remote tonight. We're all remote, and the sound is quite different where we're at. So we'll do our best to clean things up a little bit, but just to let you know that we are not in the same room tonight, as I'm sure you can probably hear. So I think the first segment we'll launch into, actually, is because this podcast is about, you know, reflecting on the games we've played, or thinking again really about, you know, what we've been doing recently, or the games we've played even over the past. We're going to talk about a few tonight as well, but I think we'll just quickly reflect on the games we've been playing recently. And Cal, kick us off. I know you've got a few lined up. What can you tell us? What have you been playing?
Absolutely. So I was terrified. I was getting closer to the date, and the homework was there, and what games had I played. And I've just been first week of teaching back, and I was just a bit nervous. I hadn't played enough. So I got a bunch of little games out, and we started playing Zombie Dice against my wife, which is a push your luck dice rolling game. You're a zombie trying to get as many brains as you can and be careful of those terrifying shotguns before they put you down. Get to 13 and enjoy the journey as you go. It's a push your luck game because you roll 3 dice, and if you get brains, happy days. But if you get shotguns, get 3 of those, you don't get to keep anything. I'll be honest, I think I started very strong every game. I was about 7 to her maybe 2. And then I was like, I'm just going to 7 to 13. That's 6 brains. I could do that in one roll. Needless to say, I got pantsed both times. That was one that I always love to get it, just to sort of break up the monotony of watching television, just a quick little game. Hanzo Teutonica, which I will not to tell too much about, because I think that's an amazing game that Dan talked about. Oozle, which is a really great game that I brought to the team this year, a couple of first years, and myself, and we just, the visual game of twist and turn, 5 blocks in, master pattern, and I am... I guess, what's the right, I don't know the right word, but visually moving and flipping these tiles to see if you can get the pattern. It feels like it should be easier than it is. I don't know how you guys are at Tetris. I don't know how you guys are at Tetris. When's the last time you got Tetris out? Anyone?
I can't even remember. It's so long ago.
Yeah.
It sounds like a Rubik's cube. You're describing, that's what I'm thinking of.
Imagine a Rubik's cube, but the solution doesn't revolve around the one thing. So you can just sort of, and you just do lots of little puzzles. It's great fun, super fast and super quick. And you play as many rounds as you like. There's no end time until you're ready to go up there. We're good. And yeah, I guess the other thing that I've been doing, board game wise, is chasing. Anyone who can sell me Champions of Midgar. I contacted Grey Fox, I went on the Pledge Manager. Somebody tried to tell me and they had to ship for shipping $200 to my house. I was like, no, that's more than I would spend on the game. So yeah, that's the one that I'm trying to get to the table via postage. So that's what I'm keen to get to. That's my last game that I've got to in the last week.
Surely that's due for a reprint at some point. It was around a couple of years ago. So it's well overdue for a reprint. So
fingers and toes crossed. Absolutely.
Let's hope. Look, I've been playing, and I mentioned it the other night on our Twitch, but I've been playing Seven Wonders. I've been revisiting Seven Wonders, particularly Seven Wonders Duel, and I'm really crap at it. Just to let everybody know, I'm really bad. Look, I'm trying my best. I've got the expansion, which is the Pantheon expansion, and so I've been getting that out a little bit. And look, I'm getting better. I have to say, I'm getting better. The more I play, the better I get. But look, it's one of those games that is quite addictive, and I really enjoy it. That's on Board Game Arena, so. Enjoying that one. The other one is the Seven Wonders Architects, which is a family-friendly, lightweight version of Seven Wonders. Really great for kids, I think, and really simple, very, very quickly. You have your wonder that you're building up, and then you have to draft or draw cards for Seven Wonders Architects from the people sitting either side of you. So you've got three piles. You've got a central pile in the middle of all the players, and then you've got a pile to your right and a deck to your left, and you can pull one from either side or one from the middle, and it'll be a resource. Like, it might be bricks, or it might be stone or paper or something like that, and with those resources you can then spend those resources to build a level of your wonder. Each level you build up will score you points. You've got war cards, which will give you military points if you win a war. So it's a really very easy, lightweight, quick, you know, you can play a game in 15 minutes. So that is Seven Wonders Architects. I've really been enjoying that. So that's a really good one for those families out there that are looking for a nice family game to enjoy with everyone. Dan, what have you been playing?
We've been doing a lot of prep work for next month. So obviously doing the streams takes a bit of work, so we've got to get all the videos done and you know, some games we already know, some games we don't. So having to learn them, having to kind of get that all ready. So this Sunday we've got Decrypto, which is just such a great game. To me, it's the Codename Beater because, in Codenames, you've got one person that's, you know, or two people, one for each team that's stuck on the other side, and they don't really feel involved in them. Whereas in Decrypto, you're constantly... you might be the code giver for your team, but you're actually part of that same team when you're trying to break the other team's code. So you've actually got that team camaraderie when you're breaking the other's code. And then when you're giving your own code, you both know what the cipher is. You just don't know what the you just have the clues that you've got to try and get them to guess the numbers. So I'm looking forward to that one on stream on Sunday. Then we've got quite a few games, actually. We've got Fog of Love for Valentine's Day, which, you know, I think everyone around the table that does know it and does have it loves it. So that's always a crowd favourite, especially I'm going to be interested to see that on stream because it's one of those games that's really good to watch. So it'll be great to see that on stream. We're probably actually, although my wife does love me, I have to remind everyone of that sometimes, she actually did suggest that someone else come and join me on stream. So, you know, we'll put that on Discord and see who the audience actually want to see play with me.
Because I know,
not in the dirty way, but yeah.
I know actually the first time we played Fog of Love, you and I, we actually played it with four players, not with two players. Do you recall that occasion?
So, I do remember that. Have a copy and I have a copy, and it was like double dating.
That's right, it was. It was a double dating Fog of Love. And it's designed for two players, but it actually works really well as four players, doesn't it?
We can actually do that for stream, actually. We probably should.
That's
because effectively you've got two couples. So it's kind of like you've got your dilemma and then you look over and you see their dilemma and you're just like, so you still play, it's like playing two separate games, but because you're next to each other, you're the couple laughing at the other couple and then you turn the card and you're like, oh shit. Like, it's really, I really enjoyed that. We probably should do that, David. That's a good idea. Then we've got Galaxy Trucker on Tuesday as well for the stream. So I'm actually quite excited. It is your game, David, but I'm quite excited to get that to the table because, you know, it's one of those earlier modern games that it'd be interesting to kind of go back to and see, right, well, how does that hold up now? Because obviously games have changed a lot in the last, 15 years since kind of board games have come back into or come into the kind of into prevalence. So, and then we've got a whole bunch of other games as well as some Kickstarter games that I can't talk about yet because they're probably a month or so away, and we're hopefully we'll actually get to pull them out on stream in March. So we'll actually see how that plays out as well. So.
Yeah.
And then the games with all the stream games. So Hunter Tonica we played on Tuesday night. Last week we played Cryptid, which Steve came down, Callum, for Cryptid, and he enjoyed himself immensely. So
we played that one in preparation for the wedding. So the night of the wedding, before tied the knot, I got that one out and played it, and they were like, "Well, what's this? Seems a bit confusing." And then they were like, "Oh, get on. This game is great." And I played that for the first time. I'm pretty sure it was your copy, Dave. Yep. And I fell in love with it right then and there. And then I went and bought myself a copy. And, carrying it.
So, Dave, do you have a copy of it as well?
No, I don't. It must have been yours.
That's mine. Yeah,
probably. Yeah, look, I
but it's such a solid game.
Yeah. And actually, not that that's really a social deduction game, but and it's not even really a... It's not a hidden movement game. For some reason, I've gone from Cryptid to thinking about a new game that's actually not on the agenda, but I'm just thinking about it. There's a new game that's getting all the goss at the moment called Mind Management.
I'm so excited for that.
Yeah, so I know that there's some videos out there at the moment for Mind Management. Really keen to check that one out too. So that looks like a great social game. I'm sure when that released is in Australia, we will be all over it, guaranteed. We've got before we move on though, I just wanted to really think about just reflecting on our Hearts of Teutonica playthrough the other night. Look, this is actually one that's really got under my skin, I gotta say. I was on the Twitch stream on the last Tuesday. I sort of changed my attitude halfway through the game. I'm like, oh, I'm just not into this. At the end of the game, I'm like, man, I want to have another go at this game. So, I've been thinking about it since we played it, and really keen to have another look. What did you guys think about Hearts of Teutonica?
I enjoyed it. I had a really good time. I mean, I think I was one of the. I didn't give up halfway through because I was always somewhere in the race. I didn't realize how thoroughly I was getting flogged until the end. I thought I was like, I was respectably in the race until it was just an absolute dredging. I think it would be, I'd like to play again with everybody fully knowing who's who in the zoo, whether that's playing on a different map, whether that's whatever it is, just everybody being on par from the start and a bit more gamers game, which I'm not often about, but with a game like this, I think having more people understand from the get-go will make a big difference as well.
Yeah, no, Dan, what are your thoughts about after the game of Hearts of Teutonica?
Yeah, so it is, obviously it was my second playthrough and I was the dick that definitely pantsed everyone. But, It's a game that I don't know. Normally, you know, like I knew I was doing okay, and I knew I was going to win, but I didn't think it was going to be that. So, and that's probably like normally in games, you have a very clear understanding. Oh, this is in the bag, and I've pants. Like it's done. I was actually shocked. I was just as shocked by as you guys, like the end game scoring almost quadrupled my score, which was just like, holy crap, that's a lot of scoring in end game scoring in contrast to during game scoring. So it was interesting because first playthrough, I definitely felt I like the game, I like the mechanics, I like the playthrough, and I can always look past, you know, various different things. But the Rowan making the insight of the theme doesn't attach to the game actually just resonated. As soon as he said it, I was like, holy crap, yeah, it makes sense. Like, because even though I know the game, and David and I have discussed it since, it's not even that you have to insert your own, because I love games that you create the story, you create the narrative, you create the... But I just felt playing it, there's actually no... There's no way of doing that. Like, it's just mechanics. Now, that's not a bad thing because I can play, and as game, as Callum says, that's a gamer's game. Like, it's a very dry, heavy gamer's game. And if you're not looking for the theme, if you're not looking for that, I don't think that there's going to be any benefit to you trying to attach a theme to it. But with a few simple changes, it was put to us in the chat that you know, looking at a gangster theme for it. The mechanics, I think, would definitely lend towards more of that. And then how do you just bring the components into the actual theme itself? And I think this is actually, David, kind of ties into what you mentioned before in terms of mind management, in that the theme of it, Sharp and Sit Down was, I wouldn't say critical of, but they were acutely aware that the theme and the mechanics didn't perfectly tie. But when I look at that, it looks like it's got a better tying than what Hansa Teutonica does. And I think for me, I'm going to go back to it for sure. I think it's a great game, but I'm only going to go back with you guys. Like, I don't think that it's going to be – I wouldn't bring it to Cade. I wouldn't bring it to more casual or social gamers. Instead of sitting down to play a game of chess, I'll sit down and play a game of Hansa. Like, it's a – I'd probably say it's very akin to the same. Like, chess is just a mechanics game. Hansa is just a mechanics. It's there. You're there competing against each other in terms of your skills and your strategy and your brain. You're not there tying into the theme. You're not trying to go. And that's not a bad thing. It's just being aware of that before you go into it.
Well, on that note, what we might do is have a quick break, and when we come back, we'll go to our soapbox. Got a segment now called the Soapbox. This is our opportunity to just get up on the pulpit for 5 minutes and talk about a topic of the week. This week's topic is called rage quitting. Now, I thought this is a good topic to talk about because recently Dan mentioned before that we're about to play Galaxy Trucker, and Galaxy Trucker was one of those games where I was introducing it to a new player, and as we were thinking about bringing Galaxy Trucker out, this came to mind where I was sitting down teaching a player how to play Galaxy Trucker, and it lasted about 5 minutes because 5 minutes in, this bloke said, "This game's not for me," and off he went. And left the whole table and basically rage quit the game after 5 minutes.
It was a bit longer than that. I think it was a little bit longer than that.
Extremely PG.
He created his old ship, and we were just about to actually go on the first session. So I was just like, well.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, you're right. He probably did stick it out for longer than 5 minutes, but, geez, it wasn't long enough to get a game in, that's for sure. Certainly wasn't long enough to form an opinion. So he certainly rage quit after Galaxy Trucker. I wondered whether guys, Dan, we'll start with you. Have you had an experience where someone you've been playing with, or maybe it was even you, have rage quit, table flipped mid-game?
I think probably there's, you've got the old adages of Monopoly and families and friends getting broken up by those kind of games. But I think Risk is probably one of those games that, this is back in the early 90s, no, early noughties, sorry, not that old. We were playing a game. Everyone at the table knew how long it was going to last. And one person just had a few bad turns and decided, nah, they're done, they're going to just leave. And they literally just didn't say a word, got up, walked out and left. And we're just like, but like, we honestly thought that they were going to the toilet and waited for a couple of minutes before we realized that they had actually just left. And we're just like, what?
There we go. Classic rage quit. Callum, what about you?
Two stories come to mind, one of which is I'm impartial to a bit of a wobbly. I think I should admit that I'm impartial to a bit of a wobbly. For those who aren't in Australia, a wobbly is when you get a bit angry, and you get a little bit that anger seep out of you into general conversation. I was trying to teach a game of throw burrito. The joy of throw burrito is that you get to throw foam burritos. Now, as I try and teach the basic construct of the game, and I'm sure at this time I wasn't phenomenal at teaching, they just spent 10 minutes not listening to me throwing the burrito in my face. And I almost wanted to tuck the game under my arm and go, I'm going to take this and I'm going to go home. I'm going to take my ball and go home. Chucked a full wobbly there. Another example is a great game, Unstable Unicorns, if you've ever played it. Now, this game is savage. If everything goes against you, you're in for a bad time. I'll agree to that. I've got mates that I play with that play not well. I mean, you've seen Steve on stream. He doesn't actually play to win. Love Steve to bits. He plays just to make sure the game is insane. He learned that tactic from another one of our mates that originally played on stream, Matt, who came to a Secret Hitler game. He's just bonkers. Love them both. We're playing a game. No worries. Everybody's having a good time. Matt's not playing to win. He could have won maybe 20 minutes ago, but he's just instead playing degrades on everybody, downgrades on everyone. And then just so he doesn't win, he plays the puppycorn, and the puppycorn can't be removed from the game. It just goes around. It just goes around and it can't be removed from the game. There's another person. They're signed out. They're checked out. They're like, I'm not going to win this game. And they were fuming. Genuinely like comically little bits of air coming from their ears, just fuming. Every time the popcorn came to their hand, they'd pick it up, they'd slam it in their paddock. They'd pick up their card. Paddock. Pick up a card and go, awesome, I end my turn, I'm picking up another card. They'd then pick up the popcorn and slam it into the next person's paddock. And I was like, you're not having fun. I think this game is not fun for you, and I thought it was amazing. And because they're tuned out, it did sort of ruin the vibe of the game because we were all a little bit trolly, but they were like, so we wrapped up the game pretty quickly after that. But I love a wobbly, but yeah.
I don't think there's been a game of Unstable Unicorns in this house without some tears. There's been tears every time. Oh,
and you know, my kids love both Unstable Unicorns and the Llamas version.
Llamas
Unleashed. We've got all of them. I think we've got some of the other ones as well, but fine. And, yeah, they're savage. Like, they are, for a cute little game,
so
you can play them so savagely, so I'm not surprised that someone wanted to rage quit them.
I'll mention one a little bit later on. So, Callum, launch away, please. What is your choice for a game that you are about to rage quit?
This is a game, bless their cotton socks, we played it on stream. I'm really trying to be as PG as possible, but my soapbox is starting to levitate with my fury as I remember playing this beautiful game. It was a 4x Euro strategy game. You know what it is? It's shit. I'm not going to mince my words. So we played this game. After an hour, I maybe had two turns, and I still had no effing clue what was going on. You should know, this is after a 40-minute teach, two full turns by every person at the table, and there was four other people at the table, and I did not know what I'm supposed to be doing. A game should not be so confusing that I look at my cards, the iconography, and just go, that means nothing. I need to go get a rule book. I look at the rule book and that icon means five different things. As you can probably tell, my tone has dropped to a place of just pure hatred. The 2 hours I lost playing this game, I want to charge the game developers to give me that back. I'll even take minimum wage. Give me my time back. You stole it, and I'm sad, and I'm sorry to the people who made this game. You didn't deserve what you're getting, but maybe it was me. Maybe it was me. Maybe I just didn't enjoy the game. Other people maybe enjoyed that game. I'm sure it belongs somewhere on someone's shelf, but to me, it's a Valentine's Day special where I sit by the fire, I pour myself a Pinot Noir, and I'm having a delightful wine, and I throw that thing in the fire pit. That is where that game belongs for me. I will name the game as we get to the end. It is a game called Voidfall that was on Kickstarter. Yeah. I was sort of excited about it. It was quite pretty.
It looks pretty. I think we were pretty tame on our first impressions. I think it was one of the first streams that we put out there.
I remember this because it was probably our third or fourth stream. Mm. And Callum's being quite generous in terms of the teach and I even actually went back and watched that teach again because I was just like, did I do something wrong in that teach? But I didn't. It took me a week to get that teach. We were very polite and kind on the stream. We went for a break because we were, I think, going into the next phase.
We only played one round.
That was one round of three. We went for a break. And everyone was just like, I don't want to go back to that. And we're just like, we were trying to be nice about it because we didn't know, we're not reviewers. That's not what we're trying to be on the channel, especially. We're here to play games. We're here to have fun. We're here to help people get into board games. And I think that game was definitely one that triggered us to actually really seriously look at how we bring games onto the channel. Because now, if we don't like a game or we don't think it's going to be good, it doesn't make the channel. Whether we're giving it a good review or a bad review, we're kind of giving it life. We just have to be mindful of that. So, it's definitely now more curated in terms of the games.
Yeah, this has actually come as an afterthought from our board games and discussions the other day when we played Hamza, was this idea of coercive games. Now, I'm a big fan of cooperative games. I love cooperative games. I love Forbidden Island. It's a game that I get to play with my wife a lot, and we love it because we get to sort of work together and we come up with different ideas. But I've thought about the other version. There's a game, just Pandemic as it's called, wonderful game. I'm loving playing the Legacy. I'll start off by saying I love the Legacy. I love the element that it gets to change. I love playing that with my wife. However, normal Pandemic by itself on a day-to-day basis is not a game that would hit my table because if you get four people around the table to play that game, one person is taking four turns and three people are doing nothing. It's a popular game. People love it. I get it. If you get to that board game and you're playing with me and I'm like, hey, think about maybe doing this, this, or this, or you could try that, and they're like, oh, just tell me what to do. We've already lost this game before we start. I might as well just play it by myself, and I don't want to play board games by myself. Otherwise, what's the point in board games for me? They're a social experiment. So I guess harassment is the last review, Beautiful Soapbox, but definitely a place that I think is this game is overrated in the scheme of things that people are like, oh, yeah, it's such a good game. You get to work as a team. It sells everywhere. But, yeah, no, I just could see it. I don't want it to hit my table. I don't want it in my collection. It's not good because of the people that you're likely to play with when you play that game.
It's funny. My view with Pandemic, just briefly, Dan, is that, look, I really enjoy Pandemic, but it's almost more fun when you lose. Mm-hmm. You sort of have more laughs at the table, and as a bit of a social game, it is in a sense more fun when you lose because it is a stressful game, and I've found that the games we lose are the ones that are more memorable. So, yeah, Dan, you wanted to add something there.
Yeah, I think that probably ties into I'll talk a bit on later, but it's more of the who you have around the table. Pandemic is definitely dependent on the people around the table, but it's also probably useful, I think, to me, and I say this, we've got Pandemic downstairs so we can play a game or two with people that haven't played it before we play some Legacy, because, I don't want to get into a Legacy game with these people that, so Dan and Kate, they have never played a Legacy game before, they've never played Pandemic before. So it's like, I don't want to jump into Pandemic Legacy before you've actually played a game of Pandemic, because there's nothing worse than jumping into a game of Legacy and then someone saying, I don't like this game. So it's like, so playing some regular Pandemic is very useful for that. But I think it's actually also one that, but I think it's a great game to have in someone's network because, and hear me out, Callum, because it actually shows the evolution of board games. Pandemic is a game that came out 12, 13 years ago, and when it came out, it was revolutionary. It was hugely innovative. It was a game changer, similar to, you know, the likes of Catan, which, you know, they don't age well now, but they're games that really kind of they're the stepping blocks that enabled us to now have the games that we have. The evolution that comes from that game, I think, is quite useful. So
yeah, look, I'm gonna almost kill Bambi with my choice for the Rage Quit. I'm going to say that I have about 45 games. So look, really, in the scheme of things, I'm not a huge collector. I'm not. I've got a curated selection. That's what I've got. But one of my children pulled out a game from the collection the other day, and I just said flat out, no. Let's play anything else was my next response. Here we go, kids. I've got 45 other games to choose from. Pick one of those. The game that I'm talking about is chess. I can't get into chess. I have two other games that I absolutely love. They are, you know, look, I can imagine that, look, Dan would be a chess master. Callum, I'm not sure about you, but I reckon you're a pretty hot shot at chess as well, am I right?
I was the president of the chess club back in primary school.
There we go.
So cool.
There are two other games that I would absolutely go for over chess. I would pull out of the shelf every single time before chess. The first one is a brilliant Japanese game that was recently republished, and that's Onitama. Onitama is a brilliant two-player game that only requires five cards and five pieces each. Onitama is a brilliant two-player game, and I would play that every single time over chess. And the other one that I know Dan is going to talk about, I think, in the future, and we might leave it for discussion on another day, Hive, or probably even the better version of it, which is Hive Pocket, is just an outstanding two-player game. And I would play that those two games every single time over chess. So I do not want to play chess ever again. There's my rage quit soapbox for this week. Dan, what have you got for us?
So I'm the PC one of the group, because for me, even Voidfall, if someone turned around and said to me, I want to play Voidfall, I would still play it with them. Now, maybe that's because I'm a masochist or a sadist, but I play games for the social component. As David said, I'm the chess nerd, so I was definitely always that. You know, I enjoy getting people around the game table, and even from a streaming standpoint, it's the social element that I love. It's the stories that you can create. Like for chess, I love chess because my uncle came down when I finished high school. And, you know, just turned 18, because Australia, 18 is the legal drinking age, and polished off an entire slab of beer each. So I had a slab and almost a slab. And we played 10 games of chess and he rage quit the last one. I should have used that example because he couldn't beat me even when I was getting drunk. But the social aspect of it is what's, like, that's why I love board games. So I'm less about what the game is and more about, are they having fun at it? Or, which is, you know, definitely Hanzo was probably let down on that part, because it was more focused on the stream and the game than it was on everyone around the table having fun. But the introduction to games or the playing of games is kind of where I more have the fun than any, you know, the particular game itself. That doesn't mean I don't have opinions on them. I have very strong opinions, and I think all of us can attest that I voice them very loudly. But it doesn't mean that I would stop. When I don't want to play a game, it might be because I'm not in the mood for it or something like that, or I can't think of something else to play. So, for instance, if someone said, Let's Play Voidfall, I'd strongly word and recommend we play Eclipse. But if they said, I just want to give this game a go, and I'll play it with them. If it's because they want to give it a go, sure. But I think Callum's like probably just going to kill himself over, and it's like, why would you put yourself through that pain?
Why would they turn around? What if they turn around and be like, actually, I've played this like 5 times and I love this game and I just feel like this will be a game that you love? What if they said that to you?
If they said that to me, I would be definitely truthful and honest. But I've played it. But if that was their favourite game and that's what they wanted to play, I'd play it.
Thanks. I can see Callum going.
I think Callum's going to rage quit our friendship.
Just racing the stream. No, I'm back in. I'm glad that you're so welcoming and loving when it comes to shit.
I'm glad that you're enjoying yourself, basically.
Sorry. I didn't know. Well, I don't think we have. Well, we've got to put an E now. Sorry, mate.
On that note, let's go for a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back. We're going to do a quick segment now on the new Board Game Geek games that have been uploaded to the Board Game Geek database recently or have been announced as new and upcoming titles, for example, on Kickstarter. Now, this week's Guess How Many show, which was on Sunday. Dan, can you recall roughly it was a 226 new entries onto the Board Game Geek database. And hundreds of games added to that database every single week. And from time to time, we pull out the ones that are most interesting to us. This week, though, I wanted to focus on a couple of titles or a couple of news items that caught our attention as well. So in our last podcast, we talked about Marvel Zombies, and the Marvel Zombies campaign is over. It's done. It's all wrapped up. And it managed to get just over $9 million Australian. That's in Australian dollars. In the end, they announced 6 expansion sets, 36 Kickstarter exclusive heroes and villains, all in miniatures. And if you wanted everything all in, it was going to set you back $863 Australian dollars. So I mentioned last time on the podcast that I wouldn't be backing this game. Just probably not that I absolutely love Marvel, as I explained on the last podcast, but for $863, I don't love it that much. So Callum, being that you were away when we did our last podcast, I thought it'd be a good chance for you to have a chat about what your take on this campaign has been.
Absolutely. Like Zombicide, I was chatting to you guys before, but Zombicide is the FIFA of the board game world. It's a fact that's been shared to me that they released 10 new Zombicides in the last 10 years. So it's a pretty impressive set of numbers to come out. To be fair, they've asked the people what they want and they give the people what they want. And you can't sort of argue that because $9 million later, they've given the people what they want. It's not a game I've played Zombicide. It's definitely on my list, on my itch list of when somebody finally gets that down to seed. And I think Marvel's really taken this chance, and now they've found out that, hey, board games are a thing, guys, and we can make money here. I know a big one for me, I'll tangent and work my way back, but basically Dice Throne's a game that I love, and I'll tell you all about that in the future because Dice Throne is my baby and I love Dice Throne. They recently released a Marvel edition, went on Kickstarter. There was massive arguments in the communities about it. They were like, oh, Marvel's taking over. I'm like, I don't care. Shut up and take my money. Like, it just, you put the word Dice Throne on that? Yes. And that's embarrassing for me, but I'm aware of that. They could release a new game every year and I'd be like, here's my money. But Marvel, like, hey, and they've got their title on 6 to 10 big stream titles that have been coming out at the moment. And like Marvel Champions is like, they're already there. They've got Marvel United, they've got Marvel Zombicide, they've got Marvel Dice Throne. They're here and they're here to stay, and this is big. Like, Marvel's already, but like in the comic book universe, you've got to accept that Marvel's already had a zombie universe. So it's not like this is a new thing that they've, an IP that they've created specifically with zombies. Zombicide, they'd be like, hey, we can adapt Marvel Zombies or stuff that we've already had anyway and then just put it on to a game that sort of does that. It's too big for me. 800 and whatever it is, or 615 US is too much for me. But people will back that and they will sell it for double.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that I saw posted up recently was that, you know, the question was, is it value for money? And I think probably unquestionably it is, because just for the simple fact that, you know, you will be able to absolutely get your money back on this title, particularly those people who went all in. They're probably just holding on to it for the resale value. So, yeah, look, is it value for money? It probably is. Another one that I came to was a new game from the Exploding Kittens team. They also brought out Throw Burrito, and that's the team called The Oatmeal. And look, Exploding Kittens, it's a game. I think it's fair to say. It's a game. Yeah, Throw Burrito, it's good for a laugh. This one, however, is called Hand-to-Hand Wombat. Love the title. It's on Kickstarter at the moment. Of course, you know, we're down here in Australia. We love our wombats. It's an awesome game. And to play this game, what you have to do is that everybody is given a secret identity, a little bit like Secret Hitler, really. Everybody's either going to be a good wombat or a bad wombat. There's one bad wombat. If you are a good wombat, what you have to do is that there's a bunch of bricks that are scattered all over the table and everybody closes their eyes. And the good wombats, your job is to build a pyramid of towers, a pyramid tower, I should say, out of those blocks, from the biggest block at the bottom to the smallest one at the top. Bad wombats, it's your job to try and mess with those towers. And when the time is up, everybody opens their eyes and then they discuss and they argue and they vote on who they think the bad wombat was. And then, of course, you get eliminated. And if you are the bad wombat, obviously you lose. And if you're the bad wombat at the end of the game, if you're the last one standing, then, of course, the bad wombat wins. So it's a social deduction game. For people that aren't into social deduction games, that's what their motto is. It's one of those social deduction dexterity games, blindfold dexterity games. Cal, what's your favourite social deduction game?
Social deduction, they can't go past Secret Hitler. Honestly, it's like I love the accusation, the hate, the love. I've almost chucked a wobbly when Tim gaslights me on stream. My team watched that and they genuinely started to believe that I was lying because I was chucking that much of a wobbly. I love it. I love being yelling at people because they're wrong. But yeah, no, I think, yeah, honestly, Secret Hitler, then some. This looks fun. This looks real fun. I've only learned about it today and I've just sent it off to one of my friends because I'm at my max of Kickstarters. I'm like, hey, can you back this for me? Because we will absolutely play it. Like, it's well keen. What about you? What's yours?
Oh, look, social deduction for me. We've played a lot of One Night Ultimate Werewolf in this family and amongst my friends. And every time we get that out, it's always good fun. Now, some people would say that it's tired. Yeah, it probably is a bit tired once you've played it over and over and over again. But every time we play it, it always gets a laugh and it's a great one. But to be honest with you, I think the best social deduction game is Blood on the Clock Tower. Now, I'm not sure if you've had a chance to play Blood on the Clock Tower, Callum.
No, not yet.
So this I think Dan and I have probably been fortunate in that we have been able to play Blood on the Clock Tower. It is an absolutely outstanding social deduction game. Really, it's Werewolf Plus. Every single player has a different role to play. You have a grimoire, somebody who comes around with a grimoire and basically guides you through the game and tells you what, you know, when it's your turn to play and what you should be doing, or not necessarily what you should be doing on your turn, but teaches you how to play the game. So it's a fantastic game. And look, I can't wait for Blood on the Clock Tower to come out. Dan, talking of social deduction games, as we were talking about Hand-to-Hand Wombat being a social deduction dexterity game, what's your favorite social deduction game?
Well, yeah, obviously Blood on the Clock Tower, as you mentioned. I have that game coming. We've also been trying to get it on stream as well, but it's just too hard to get. We could play it online, but it's very difficult to. There's a streams out there, but that's all they do. I think that the best thing about our stream is that we introduce people to games.
But in terms of social deduction games, well, I've got a lot. I've got quite a few social deduction games. Maybe that says a lot about my personality. Deception Murder in Hong Kong, I do love. Obscurio, absolutely love that game. So, yeah, I think at the moment my most favourite is Obscurio.
All right, now the last little final bit of news we've got for this show is that it's not board game related as such, but it is certainly board game adjacent. Well, you guys tell me. This one is a Dungeons and Dragons TV, live action TV show that's just been announced. Now, I'm going to assume that it's going to be on the Paramount Plus service, and it's by the producers of Red Notice. I'm not sure if you saw Red Notice from on Netflix, and also Dodgeball. Do you remember the movie Dodgeball, a true underdog story? So the director, Rawson Marshall-Thurber, is going to pen and direct this TV program, and it's a live-action TV series, as I said. It's based on the Hasbro fantasy role-playing game property called Dungeons & Dragons. I don't need to give it any more introduction than that. I've got two blokes on the podcast today who's going to tell us all about Dungeons and Dragons. Tell us, guys, do you think a live action Dungeons and Dragons is going to hit? What do you think? Callum.
Who plays Loki? Can someone quickly remind me, because the name's completely lost on me.
Tom Hiddleston plays Loki?
Oh, yeah. So Tom Hiddleston plays D&D, and he said it really beautifully, that playing D&D is the shared storytelling where you create your own world and your own story, and nobody outside of your group of people that are joining and experiencing that will get it. They can, like we've seen Critical Role, but they're created with an entertainment side as well. I don't know, calling something a live-action D&D show, it's just a fantasy show. That's all D&D is, with a bunch of murder hobos that do dumb stuff. D&D is just like, hey, you could be anybody in the world. You could be the nicest paladin in the history of ever, or you can kick a grandma and nobody's going to do anything about it. I want to say none of my characters to date, and I'm not saying that it is above them, but none of my characters to date have kicked a grandma, but I've seen it happen more than I believe should have happened. D&D is just welcome to a fantasy world where everything comes down to sort of a role and everything could go really well. That beautiful heroic speech could be exactly what you asked, or you could swallow an extra couple letters.
Dan, I know you've seen The Legend of Vox Machina, and I haven't yet. So should I watch The Legend of Vox Machina?
Absolutely. In fact, I think that you should watch it multiple times. I think that it's going to be good so it's probably important to note that my only concern with how you introduced, and it's not how you introduced, but how they're introducing the live action, is that it's a D&D live action. I kind of go, what? No. Like, Legend of Vox Machina, you look at Prime, you look at everything, it's not pitched anywhere as being a D&D campaign. You watch it, and you're like, I don't notice this as a D&D campaign, because it's about the story. Playing D&D is about the creation of that story. Having it on media is the end result, and you know, I could definitely be biased with the Vox Machina because I love Critical Role and I've been watching it since the beginning. Like we were watching it from the beginning because we were watching Geek and Sundry before that, and then they were just like, "Well, we're going to launch a Twitch channel, and our first thing that's going to be on there was, you know, I'm not sure it was exactly the first, but it was one of the early things, was, you know, a D&D campaign, and we tuned in for the very, very first episode. And you know, although I can't keep up every week with it, you know, I do eventually catch up, mostly usually on the podcast, but it's the act of creation that I love. And yes, they're extremely talented. Everyone that I play D&D with or have played with D&D with, it's bringing your own element to the story. It's not trying to be Sam Riegel. Don't. You can't be Sam Riegel, because Sam Riegel is a freaking nutcase that is too talented for his own good. You can be yourself and bring some elements of, you know, I'd love to bring some, you know, David, I can't wait to bring you into a D&D campaign. It's that act of enjoyment. And I think pitching a TV show is saying this is a D&D live action. I'm like, well, in order for it to be a D&D live action, it has to be a Critical Role. Like that's, you know, you're watching people do the voice acting. And the live action part in terms of, you know, telling a story live action, look at the things that have come out in the last year
in terms of what's good. You've got Arcane, you've got Witcher, you've got Vox Machina, you've got a lot of these. The ones that are engaging, the ones that I've resonated with the most from bringing a one medium into the TV format is Arcane and Vox Machina. It's the animated ones. They can do things in there you can't do in live action. In live action, you're kind of still limited to the realms of our own, whereas in Arcane and Vox Machina, it's all animated, so they can do all the weird and wacky. And Vox Machina have not shied away from it being adult content. They didn't try and bring a D&D campaign and say, oh no, now we're going to make it a PG or slightly M. Like, it's, almost kid-friendly, but it'll still get an M rating. No, they've just gone, no, full at it. Within the first 5 minutes, you see Scanlan's junk. Like, it's full at it, and it's actually what we need to have, because what other animated shows do adults have? We're stuck kind of watching these younger ones, which isn't as entertaining or enjoyable. So I'd love to see it succeed. Definitely going to be watching Vox Machina. I'll watch that and keep watching that, because I want to support and see it grow, but I would be hesitant with a live action.
So we have had live action feature length movies of Dungeons and Dragons. There was one in 2000. It starred Jeremy Irons. It's actually got a current Rotten Tomatoes score of 10%. With some reviewers calling it absolutely downright offensive, I think it's got a pretty low bar to clear, to be honest. But it's really going to be hard to see if it compares. Like, the quality of Arcane is unbelievable. I said, I think
Arcane's League of Legends, we know that, but it's bringing, like, the concept of bringing something else, which is still a gaming aspect, into a different medium.
All right, well, everyone, we're going to wrap things up for this show. We're just going to have a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what's upcoming for Games Night App. Stick with us. All right, well, thank you very much for joining us today for our second episode of our podcast. Dan, let's go through what we've got coming up. We've got our Twitch schedule this next episode. We're gonna feature Decrypto, and there's a brilliant teach that you're gonna put up, really high quality teach for that one. So check out that one on our YouTube channel. We've got Galaxy Trucker coming up soon. We've got a Valentine's Day special, which is Fog of Love, that's coming up. We're gonna play Inish, which is one of our favorite games, and Chinatown, which is an absolutely brilliant auction trading game. We've got that coming up on the Twitch stream as well. Dan, tell us about our teach videos and our board game bar.
Well, yeah, so we are now in 4K, so the quality is a bit better, which is good. That's you probably didn't want to see more of my face, but you can now. They get released on Saturday, Australian Eastern Standard Time at 1 o'clock for the board game bar, which is the drink that we pair with the game that we're going to be playing on the Sunday. And then every Sunday and Tuesday at 1 o'clock Australian Eastern Standard Time, we release the teach for that game. So, yeah, as you said, this Sunday we are playing Decrypto, and we have a martini, a dirty martini. Just the way that Bond loves it. Beautiful. Not shaking, because apparently that's the bad way to have it.
No, you don't shake it. You stir it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that's what's coming up on Games Night App. You can find us on Twitch, Games Night App on Twitch. You can also find us on YouTube. Of course, our podcast is available on Spotify, and hopefully we will be back really, really soon with episode 3. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.
Good night. Bye. Bye.